Book of Revelation, we're going to be, again, we're in two chapters. And we've been here a few weeks, and I have not finished what I intended to start, but that's all right. You finished what you needed to have done. You know, we can't do that in the operating room, you know. We can't get half done with an operation and go, oh, we're out of time and quit. You know, I can't. There are days I wish we could. But I told a lady the other day, said, my gosh, she was an older lady. She was like Jerry's age. And so she said, why is it so cold in here? And the nurses run in this long explanation about germs, and the germs don't live as well in the cold, and the lights get hot. And it was a pretty long explanation, and I'd see she'd lost interest long before they were done. And I said, now I'm going to give you the real reason. I said, so the ice cream doesn't melt. That's because once you're asleep, we have a party. And the nice thing is that you pay for it. And then I put her to sleep. So, Revelation 17 and 18, we're at the two chapters called The Woman and the Beast. It's the focus and the central point. And today we're going to talk about just one thing. We're going to talk about the woman and the eight heads. And we have talked a lot about, I think, is the basic background of understanding 12, 13, and 17, and that is the seven heads and ten horns. I tell you, if you get this, you'll understand the heart and core of the book of Revelation, because really the book of Revelation centers around this person called the Antichrist. And I say that with firm conviction right from the mouth of our Savior when the disciples asked him, what is the sign of the end of the age? And he pointed to basically one thing. When you see the abomination of desolation occur in the temple, then let the reader understand, according to Daniel the prophet, and when you see that happen, you better flee. Because he says that is the beginning of the great tribulation. So I stand on that he is the central personage, and the book of Revelation describes him. That book is really about him, especially focusing on 12, 17, and 13. Now here's what I put on the screen here. The non-sequential progression of this book is not following in the order of the chapters. The order of events are really out of order. But chapter 12 defines the career of Satan as the beginning as the serpent and then ending as the beast. He has seven heads and ten horns. In Revelation 17, we find this beast-like character who has the character of the serpent in chapter 12 carrying a woman who's a harlot who thinks she's a queen. But he's carrying her because she's on top of him. She's in control. And that's talking about the first 3.5 years of the tribulation. Now, it's a scarlet beast that has seven heads and ten horns. In Revelation 13, now that comes later, and this is when the dragon really comes up out of the nations as the Antichrist. He's got ten horns and seven heads. And now on the ten horns are seven crowns, or ten crowns. Before, in chapter 12, the seven heads had the crowns. That's a distinctive difference. And it's a difference that really matters. I put this up here, and with one last note, that the ten horns, he says in 17, we're going to look at this today, this is where we're going to be today, the ten horns are ten kings. And what he says in 17 is there are ten kings who have not yet received a kingdom. They don't have crowns yet, but they receive authority as kings with the beast for 1 hour, meaning a very short time. But remember, it's in chapter 13 we saw these ten horns, they have the crowns. Why? Because that's looking right at the middle when they have actually come to power. These ten kings form one entity. They're all ruling simultaneously. Now we're going to look at this sheet, and this is where I'm going to maybe slow down a little bit and allow you to clarify anything that you may be wondering about. But we've gone through this timeline in detail. I'm just going to throw it all up here at once, make a couple points that after the rapture, there's no believers on earth. God then sends his two witnesses. Jesus Christ, as he breaks open the first seal, sends the one who is the Antichrist, but he's not recognized the Antichrist. I have it written here at the bottom, he's the beast from the sea. Really, the world sees him as the great peacemaker. He's the one that's going to make the covenant with the many for 1 week. Does this, places himself under the authority of the apostate church and the Jewish Levitical system because he's going to use them to come to power. And at the same time that he's doing that, the two witnesses are proclaiming that the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and they're beginning to see these 144,000 men sealed. They're under their ministry. They're going to go out into the world and go through the entire tribulation proclaiming the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And it is. This is the final 7 years. It's coming. There's no way it's going to be stopped now. And of course, the Antichrist, once he gets to the 3.5 year point, he is going to then break his covenant, just like Jesus says, commit the abomination of desolation. And that begins the great tribulation. And what Jesus referenced there is in reference to Israel as a people, because it's that point that Israel is now, instead of being protected, is going to be persecuted. And anyone who follows these 144,000 is in jeopardy. Anyone, Jew or Gentile. Remember, too, in Revelation 13, as the beast comes from the sea in Revelation 13, he's accompanied by what is one who is called the beast from the earth. And the beast from the earth, as the picture shows there, supports this beast from the sea. And it's the beast from the sea in Revelation 13 has really always been around since the beginning here, since he made peace. But John's going to depict him as in 13 as now he's coming to power. He's coming to full fruition. And he's assisted by this beast from the earth who's going to, remember, when we studied 13, he directs people to the worship of the beast from the sea, or what we call the Antichrist. And who Jesus says is the one who's going to break the covenant, commit the abomination of desolation. Now, these are human beings being characterized as beasts. As God sees these men, they are beast-like. They look like nice guys, but they're not. God is saying this man is actually a beast in character. And his character is the same as Satan's character, because that's where you have the seven heads and the ten horns, to connect that person with that kind of character. The character of Satan. The peacemaker, who is the beast, is going to be manifested as the beast at the middle of the week, is going to use the apostate church and the apostate Jewish Levitical system to solidify his power. And use these ten leaders who exist during this first period, use these ten leaders to eventually come to the point where he's going to take over, and they're going to want him to take over. Essentially the same thing Hitler did in the 30s. And once he came to power, he no longer needed those who supported him. Then by that time they wished they had not supported him, because they realized who he was and what he was doing. Sometime after the rapture, sometimes when this peacemaker makes the covenant with the many for 1 week, as Daniel 9:27 says, he's making a peace covenant that allows the Jewish people to build a temple on the Temple Mount. Now, if you listen to the news today, you would come to the conclusion that that is impossible. Therefore, this must not be true. That's the conclusion of most people. My conclusion is, as astounding as that is, this is going to happen. And there will be a temple. How does that come about? I only know that that can come about because a peace treaty is made that somehow allows the Jewish people to have a temple again. And they do have a temple, and it's an active temple, because it says in Daniel 9:27, in the middle of the week, he does what? He puts a stop to sacrifice and grain offering that's going on, and he brings it to an end. And then he demands worship of himself. He makes himself God. When it says in Revelation 13 that when people worship the beast, they're actually worshiping the what? The dragon, who is Satan, of chapter 12. What Satan has always wanted. When he was named Lucifer, he was the chief of all the cherubim, and he wanted worship for himself. And he still wants that. And when he came to tempt Jesus, what did he say? Worship me, and I will give you all the kingdoms of the world. Meaning that he is in possession of all these kingdoms, because he can't give away what he doesn't have. See, that's the whole point of it. At the Garden of Eden, he became the usurper. He became the one who took over the world from Adam and Eve. What Jesus Christ is doing when he's breaking the seals on this scroll, he said, I'm coming back to take back what is mine that has been paid for at the cross. I'm going to now take it back. And so the tribulation is really a battle between Jesus Christ himself and his opponent, the serpent, who from his origins are in the Garden of Eden as far as this world is concerned. And let's tie these three chapters into the time grid here, into the timeline, because I think this is a picture that may help. And so Revelation 12, that shows Satan going back all the way back to the beginning. Beginning as a serpent and then coming up as a dragon in Revelation 12. Says, you know, he's cast out of heaven, then he's going to persecute the woman for 1,260 days, for time, times, and half a time, for 3.5 years. So it takes you all the way, it starts at the very beginning, takes you all the way through the tribulation. And this one here, Revelation 17, that's the next event in order. And this is talking about the apostate system that comes up. Once believers are removed, now it can come to fore as an apostate system, along with other religious systems. And we're going to get into that next week, but I'm not going to really cover that this week. But this woman, is an apostate religious system, exists from the beginning of the tribulation, goes all the way for the first 3.5 years, and then Satan, as the Antichrist, overthrows her. That is the beginning of her destruction, which kind of goes on through this last 3.5 years. The last chapter, and we've already looked at this, is Revelation 13. This focuses on the very center of the tribulation and the rule of the man we call the Antichrist for the last 3.5 years. And he, at this point, he no longer needs this apostate religious system of Revelation 17. Nor does he need the apostate Jewish Levitical system is in existence during this time. This slide we looked at last week, we looked at it in pieces. I just want to point out to you again, the whole basis of my interpretation of the book of Revelation is based in Daniel 2, 7, and 9. The illustration of the seven heads and the ten horns, the illustration of the one coming up, Satan's beast coming up and breaking the covenant in the middle of the week, that's Satan's beast. In Revelation 17, Satan's beast is a peacemaker, but in Revelation 13, he comes up in the middle of the week and actually breaks the covenant. Again, the consistent thing in here is there's seven heads, ten horns. Seven heads, ten horns. You get a clue of what we're going to look at today when you look under Daniel chapter 7, when it says, as for the ten horns, out of this kingdom ten kings will arise, and another will arise after them. That's going to be the point we look at today. We looked at this last week as well. This is kind of the trail of the serpent. The same serpent that starts in Eden is going to be the one who is going to be the final kingdom, the beast, the little horn. That's the little horn of Daniel 7 that we just looked at. So count those heads. You count the heads. Egypt, Assyria, Greece, Medo-Persia, Babylon, Rome. Now we're up to 6. Jesus lived under Roman rule. 7 is the revived Roman Empire, which is comprised of 10 coinciding rulers. And then number 8 is the beast and the little horn. So actually there's 8 heads here. If you look at it this way, Revelation 12 speaks of the serpent. And the serpent is really looking at just the first 7 heads here. 7 heads, Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia. I'm just depicting the same thing. Out of Rome comes the revived Roman Empire. That's the 10 kings. Out of the revived Roman Empire comes the beast, who's the little horn. Same thing I just said, just a different picture. Revelation 17, that's the revived Roman Empire. She dominates in that period when the 10 kings are actually coming together, forming this power base. Then the beast comes out of this revived Roman Empire. That's Revelation 13. That's the Antichrist. That's the man who will be indwelt by Satan. All right, now we're going to come to the main point of the lesson today. Revelation 17 and 18, the woman and the beast, and 17, 1 through 6. What we find out is the woman is the great harlot. In 17, 18, we find out the woman is the great city. We're not going to look today at either one of those things. Next week, I'm going to pick up and look at the woman as the great harlot. Then the following week, we're going to look at the woman as the great city. Who's the great city? The great city is Babylon. Another amazing thing about this period, that Babylon will become the major city and center of commerce and religion in this period. You go, how can that be? Well, it's just the same question that Lewis Berry Chafer asked in 1920 as he studied prophecy and saw that there was going to be Israel as a nation, and people are saying, how can that be? Well, it was 1948, Israel became a nation. And Louis Berry Chafer, I heard him on a lecture one day about 2 months after Israel became a nation, and the man was very excited. Very excited. And Louis Berry Chafer, if you remember, was president of Dallas Theological Seminary, 30s, 40s, 50s. All right, so today we're going to look at this concept, the woman and the eight heads, 7 through 17. But let's look at 17, 7, and 8, the amazing new life of the beast. And I want to pick up in 6 and just make a point that as she is in power, sitting on top of the riding this beast that has 7 heads and 10 horns, that John says, I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the witnesses of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered greatly. So believers who are following the Jewish 144,000 who are saying, I think these Jewish guys are right, I believe them, they're going to be killed by this system, by this religious system that's going to dominate in the Western world, especially during this time. So let's go to 7. The angel said to me, why do you wonder? I shall tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast. See how they're linked together. You can't separate these. The beast that carries her, which has the 7 heads and the 10 horns. And the beast you saw was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss and then go to destruction. So here he gives the entire life of this man called the beast. He was, now he's not, and he's about to come up out of the abyss and go to destruction. The end point is his destruction. He's not going to succeed. He's not going to win. Genesis 3:15 says, the woman is going to have a seed, it's going to crush your head. You'll bruise him on the heel, but he's going to crush your head. He can't win. And then it says, and those who dwell on the earth will wonder. The earth dweller will wonder, whose name has not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that he was and is not and will come. Now what's that mean? That means that this man was alive, he dies, and then he comes back to life. But when he comes back to life, he comes up from the abyss. Now that means that he's going to be satanically or demonically empowered, because the abyss is a reference to the place of the demons. Now if you go back and look at 13:3, you see that progression of events. 13:3, 13:14, 13:12. Because in 13:3 it says, I saw one of his heads, and this is talking about the character of the serpent who's now empowering this beast. I saw one of his heads as if it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed, and the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. They see a miracle, a man dies and brought back to life, they are amazed, they're willing to follow him now. Look at 12. He exercises, this is talking about the second beast who's going to bring the focus of worship to the first beast, and he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. So he has authority as long as he's in the presence of the first beast. He makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast. Why? Because his fatal wound was healed. Look at 14. He deceives those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which was given to him to perform in the presence of the beast. So see, the two are always working together in concert. But the second beast, the beast of verse 11, that looks like a lamb, is always pointing to the worship of the major beast. And it says, in 14, it says, in the presence of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast, who's had the wound of the sword and has come to life. So now, associated with this man, he's going to build an image to honor him. And this image is going to be able to speak. The image itself will be able to speak. That it may be that this image will be what he leaves in the temple after he proclaims himself as God. And remember, the times of the Gentiles began in Babylon under Nebuchadnezzar and will end with this man called the Antichrist just before Jesus Christ returns and brings about his destruction. What did Nebuchadnezzar do when he found out he was the head of gold? In chapter 3, we find out that he did what? Build an image of himself made purely of gold. He didn't really buy into this idea that his kingdom was going to end, as Daniel had told him in the dream, is going to be replaced by a silver kingdom. He really didn't buy into that. How do I know that? His whole image is made out of gold. And what did he say? You either bow down to this or you'll be thrown into the furnace. But the point of that story is this is the beginning of the times of the Gentiles, and he's going to begin that period with an image. Now, how does the times of the Gentile end? It ends with an image of a person who has died and come back to life, and this image is going to be one that's going to have to be worshipped, because by worshipping the image, you're worshipping the man, exactly like Nebuchadnezzar demanded back in Daniel chapter 3. The whole picture here imitates Jesus. It's a satanic trinity. Satan the Spirit empowering this man who dies and comes back to life. And there is one who acts and functions like the Holy Spirit that directs all worship toward him. So it's a satanic trinity. The Jewish people, the reason they make the covenant with this man is because he comes forward and is able to make peace at the beginning of the tribulation. This must be Messiah. Because what did Messiah promise the Jewish people? To bring peace and to overthrow wicked Gentile powers. And this man seems to be doing that. The deception is astounding. Jesus says this: the deception is going to be so great that if possible, even the elect would be deceived. But that's not possible for the elect to be deceived, because anyone whose name is written in the book of life is elect, and they cannot be deceived. They're going to follow the 144,000. Just like the 144,000 are going to be sealed by God. They're not going to seal themselves. They're going to all of a sudden recognize, this is my task. Like John the Baptist. They're going to go out into the world and proclaim the kingdom of heaven is at hand. So this is the amazing life of the new beast. This is the ground. This is the ground of the greatest deception that the world will really ever see. The ability to work this kind of a sign gift. I believe it's a real death, is based on what he says in 12 and 14. I believe it's a real death. It's saying in 17:17 and 8, in verse 8, the beast that you saw was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss and then go to destruction, and those who dwell on the earth will greatly wonder when they see the beast that he was there, he made peace, he was here, he was among us, and all of a sudden he gets killed, and now he's back. And you think that's not going to make people worship? Can you imagine what the response is going to be on CNN when this person is brought back to life? What a deception. What a beautiful deception. So 13:13 and 14, the world is going to say, how did he do that? It's amazing. How did that happen? How did he do that? And remember, it's the assistance of this beast that looks like a lamb with the two horns that really assists in this whole process of bringing him back to life. And then saying, you build an image. And then saying, if you don't receive the mark that coincides with this image, you can't buy or sell. So it's the second beast, the one that looks like the lamb in Revelation 13, who really is directing everything for this Antichrist. Now, if you look at 9 and 10, that tells us there's been a long history between the woman and the beast. John does what he did back in 13 when he talked about the number 666. He says, you know, it's going to take great wisdom to understand this. And he says in verse 9, here's a mind that has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits, and they are seven kings. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits, they are seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, the other is not yet come, and when he comes, he must remain a little while. There is the partnership between this long-standing series of kingdoms and this woman. This is not a new thing. When he says this, the seven heads are seven mountains on which a woman sits, there are seven kings, five have fallen, one is, the other has not yet come. He's talking about that series of nations that we've already looked at. The seven mountains are the seven heads that we saw that are on the serpent. The seven mountains are the seven heads that we saw in Revelation 13. And he further defines that by saying there are seven kings or kingdoms. Five have fallen. Who are the five that have fallen already by the time John is looking at this? Egypt, Assyria, Greece. What's the one that is as John is writing this? Okay, there you are. That's six. The other has not yet come. That's seven. And when he, and actually the Greek verb here could be he, she, or it, but he wants to make sure that you see that this is a kingdom and a king, so you could say it and he comes. Now the he here isn't just involving one person, it's involving 10 people who are going to come. That's the seventh head. It has 10 horns. The seventh head has 10 horns. Now, none of these kingdoms that he's talked about had had just one ruler. They had multiples of rulers. But he's going to focus as if they're one kingdom, which they are. So he said, this one that when he comes must remain a little while. So the next thing is then, the beast himself is an eighth. An eighth what? An eighth head. That's verse 11. Look at this. The beast which was and is not, referring back up to what he said in verse 8, was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss, which was and is not, which was alive and is now dead, is himself an eighth and is one of the seven, and he goes to destruction. He says it again. Here's his end. He can't win. But he's an eighth head. Now look what he says in 11. He says, this eighth head is out of the seventh. He's one of the seven, is what my translation says, but the word one isn't there. It's and is out of the seven. And he comes actually out of the seventh, the last head. And then he goes to destruction. So that's why the beast, or the Antichrist, or that beast you see coming up out of the sea in Revelation 13 is actually kingdom number 8. Because he's going to take over from kingdom number 7, which is the 10-horned kingdom. What about the 10 kings? Where do they come in? This is where he's going to further define 12 through 15, the 10 kings. The 10 horns you saw are 10 kings. In verse 10, he said this, the one has not yet come. When he comes, he doesn't say that he is a composite of 10, but now he's going to describe it here. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have not yet received a kingdom. That goes back to what he said before, that the seventh head has not yet come. Because he's looking at the period of the first 3.5 years, he says they have not yet received the kingdom that they're going to receive, but they receive authority as kings with the beast for 1 hour. That's what he's looking forward to. So when the beast in chapter 13 comes up out of the sea, the 10 horns have crowns on them. They don't have any crowns here in chapter 17. They get their crowns when they take their authority with the beast and rise up with him. And it's only for a short time. Why is that? These have one purpose, to give their power and authority to the beast. They come together and they decide we're going to give all of our power to him. And that's why it says in the previous verse it's just for an hour. Because they're not going to keep their power. They're going to function in much the same way as the lamb beast did. Going to give all focus to the first beast. They're going to give their power and authority to the beast. Verse 14, these will wage war against the lamb. Now that's not the lamb with the two horns in Revelation 13. That's the lamb back in Revelation 6, the one who's breaking the seals, Jesus Christ. And the lamb will overcome them because he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those who are with him are the called and the chosen and the faithful. There's the progression of salvation. Called in time past, something we can't see. Chosen, that call's brought to fruition. People hear the message of the 144,000, they believe it. And then they remain faithful to the testimony of Jesus Christ. And for that, many of them will be killed. Remember back in verse 6, that the woman is drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the witnesses of Jesus. The witnesses of Jesus were faithful to the purpose and the calling of Jesus during this time. And then in verse 15, just as he said to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are the peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. She is really in controlling power over the Western world at this time. Not good news for the woman from this point on, because look at 16 and 17. The 10 horns which you saw and the beast, because they've given their power over to the beast, these will hate the harlot, make her desolate and naked, will eat her flesh and burn her up with fire. So they're going to get rid of this false harlot woman because there's no longer any need for her. And then in the final verse, it says, for God has put in their hearts to execute his purpose. Okay, you go, wow, these men are doing this. They're getting rid of this harlot because they no longer need her. But now you find the underlying driving force that's in their hearts. For God has put it in their hearts to execute his purpose by having a common purpose. The common purpose is what? To give their authority over to the beast. And then in conjunction with the beast, they're going to get rid of the harlot. And they're going to do it by giving their kingdom to the beast until the words of God should be fulfilled. What God says is going to happen is going to happen. So you see behind it all, God's getting his purpose fulfilled, but it looks totally like it's the actions of men who are doing it. Now, fortunately, that's not true in our world today, is it?
Yeah.
Look at verse 8, 18:8. This is talking about the same thing, but from a different perspective. For this reason, in one day her plagues will come, pestilence and mourning and famine, and she will be burned up with fire. For the Lord God who judges her is strong. Who's doing away with her? Is it the 10 kings and the beast, or is it God himself? Well, it's explained in verse 17. God is motivating them to do his will, and they don't even know it. They have no awareness that they're carrying out God's prophetic plan. You have in the world today people trying to put a stop to God's prophetic plan. It's like holding your fingers against a giant dike that's all of a sudden sprung 50 leaks. What God has said will happen here is going to happen no matter what men try to do to stop it. And of course, the big move today is we've got to get peace in the Middle East. We've got to get peace in the Middle East or else Armageddon is going to come. Hey, Armageddon is going to come. And all these things are going to come about that we're reading about today. And we can't stop it. But we can stand back and watch and praise God and go, isn't it amazing what he's doing in bringing his plan about? So there we are. We're talking about how is it that the Antichrist uses the harlot to come to power and then does away with her. And what I've done here in this section, what I really want to focus on is to explain to you that the beast himself is an eighth kingdom in and of himself. That once he takes over in the middle of the 3.5 years, he says this is a whole new ball game. Satan has empowered him. He's taken over the temple. He's broken his covenant. He's now making a move for worldwide dominion, which he never achieves. Why? Because he gets destroyed before he can ever bring it about. It's got to be so frustrating for Satan and for this man, because all they have to do is read the book and know that they can't win. So next week we're going to go back to the beginning of Babylon. How did Babylon start? How did this woman, this personification of all the religious systems of the Western world are going to bring all religions together to allow people to be so horribly deceived for a time? And how did it start? How did it start? And what's the history of this woman? We looked at the history of the serpent. Now we're going to look at the history of the woman next week.